everybody. This is William Ben Pilar, and this is Fired Up, your source for Friday night conservative talk. Right now, I am riding solo as we're having some technical difficulties with my co-host G. Mangani, but hopefully he will get that taken care of. And until then, I will ride solo, but hey, I've done it before. In fact, I do it every week more than once. So let's get right on. Well, first of all, let me tell you what I do plan on talking about here tonight. Let's get that going. First of all, the Democrat Party, I believe, is dying a slow death. The DNC just had their change of leadership with new elections. And at the end of the day, well, kind of the same old, same old. Then we're going to talk about, has Fox News become the news network for all Americans? Not just Republicans, but Democrats too. And I'm being dead serious. And I've got the data to back it up. And then we're going to talk about demanding money back from the grift. How media companies grifted from the government. And while technically not illegal, I will show you how the grift is done. And then we'll close it up. If we have time, we'll close it up with our hot takes. If not, look for our hot takes in a separate clip format. Before I go on, do not forget, you can find this podcast at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, ePandora. So, let's get down to it. I still don't see Mr. G. My God, he's probably stressing trying to get online. So let's get started here, though. And he can join in. The Democrat Party dying a slow death. The shifting sands of Democrat leadership. James Carville, the heart and soul of the party for many years, through its golden years, critiques the rise of new faces. All right, as I say, the Democrat Party is currently lost in the wilderness and is going through a transformative phase marked by internal debates and a visible shift in leadership dynamics. Veteran strategist James Carville's recent public frustration with the party's direction, specifically the DNC, after their leadership elections, has sparked a broader conversation about the future of Democratic politics. It's not only on the ideological direction, but also on the generational and identity-based changes within the party's leadership, as exemplified by the rise of David, I was not at Parkland, but I said I was, Hogg, and Malcolm Kenyatta. So let's delve into the implications of these shifts, exploring their continued vital pursuit of identity politics, the continuation of the emasculation of men, and pushing lesser numbered parties over the majority, despite not realizing how unpopular a party they are right now. Are you guys aware that there was an Axios survey and the Democrat Party has an unfavorable of 57% and favorable 31%. And the Pew Research Center actually has them at a favorable 37%. I couldn't find the unfavorable. And I didn't want to just subtract the numbers just because of the simple perspective. There's always undecided. So I wasn't sure how the undecided broke. But favorable at 37%. All right. So right now there's an internal battle. And the progressive / socialist wing of the party won that. Why do I say socialist? They believe in big government. You know, real quick on socialism. Socialism is built on honest to God goodness of truly helping one another. The problem is it doesn't work because of human nature and the natural norm of power corrupts, and it corrupts absolutely. And that's just not how life works. If I'm working my tail off and the guy next to me isn't working his tail off, eventually I'll stop working. And that, in a nutshell, is the problem with socialism. So, you know, these progressive socialists, some of these youngsters probably do want to help, but have no clue. Why? Well, they don't even know how to wipe their tush yet. You know, David Hogue has never held a real job. Never. Never. You know, and neither has Ken Martin. And what I mean by real job? A job in the private sector. So who is Ken Martin? Ken Martin is your new Democrat National Committee chair. He won the role of chair of the DNC about a week and a half ago. His election was part of a strategic move to refresh the party's leadership. They know they need a change after the beatdown they took in 2024. You know, Ken Martin, he addressed racial equity during his campaign for DNC chair. In fact, I don't know who did it, but there was somebody his ethnicity doesn't matter, but he was an African-American journalist. He sat there and said, raise your hands if you think there was racism or something like that in terms of Kamala Harris losing. And every single person raised their hand, and he responded with right answer. See, they haven't changed. They haven't changed at all. Okay, let me pause here real quick, and let's bring on Big Man G. Big John. G, how you doing? Speak.
Good. How does it sound? Better?
You sound much better, my friend. All right. To the audience, this is G. Mangani. He's the only guy I can ever talk about Hindu movies with, sadly. I don't have
right. At least here in America.
Yeah. G, so I did the intro, gave him the tonight's topics. Right now I'm talking about Ken Martin and addressing racial equity during the election process. So real quick, I talked about how they really haven't turned the page yet, how they're looking to turn the page, but James Carville, he just doesn't see it happening. Your thoughts real quick.
No, they're not changing the page, and they had this whole, okay, we need to have this gender equality type of yardstick for who's going to be part of the DNC leadership, and I think that's absurd. So I think they have a four-year time period where you have to equalize everything. Meaning, if you have 10 women or 10 men in leadership during that four-year period, you also need to have 10 women in leadership during that four-year period. So they're not learning much, because why don't you just choose the best people instead of dealing with gender and identity issues and racial issues or whatnot?
Well, you know, that is one of the major problems, is when you're not a meritocracy, you get mediocrity.
Right.
I apologize. I paused here because our producer chimed in. It says it's not Hindu, it's Bollywood. Educate our producer, Big John. Actually, there's Hindu, there's Telugu. When you start watching and you realize, oh, it's not Bollywood. That's an Americanized term. Am I right, G, or what?
It is. It turned out to be. It started off as kind of an insult because it's clone of Hollywood, but then they did embrace it eventually. So I think it's one of those things where, you know, they've embraced the term. But
right, but whenever I see a movie described, it's always Telugu. Like Telugu, I get out of those movies, that's the working class of India. That's where they come from, the poor, to rise up to be their heroes. Then you get, I don't know what part Hrithik Roshan is from, but to me, there's your rich elitist. You know, there's your Kennedys, meaning he was born into the acting world and all that. Anyway, we are massively digressing here, but a little bit of G there for Indian movies. Anyway, so no, G, you're right. They're embracing mediocrity for the sake of equity. And to me, you're Indian, I'm Latino. I have come to look at it as that's a white superior. It's not even white, because a lot of blacks and a lot of Latinos are preaching the same thing. It's a superiority complex from what I see as the educated class, looking down on us poor brown people, us poor Latinos. I have to say that separately, because you can look at my skin tone. We come from every skin tone. But that's how I see it. It's like you're talking down. You think we're too dumb. No, give us a better education system, and we don't need equity, because equity is not helping us. We're still living in the ghettos or projects, and even white poor Americans are living in the trailer parks. Am I looking at it wrong?
No, I think what they want to do is try to take minorities and give them a leg up, when I think most minorities just want a fair shake, and those are two very different things. A leg up is, okay, give me an advantage over some white guy out there, some demonized white guy. Give me an advantage so I can beat that guy out. And if you're given that, I mean, everyone's going to accept that and take it, right? But I think in our heart of hearts, we don't want that. We just want a fair shake. We don't want to be discriminated against. And that's very different from, okay, well, no, well, you need to have, at least 14% of the Democrat leadership needs to be black, and 1% needs to be Indian, and 5% needs to be Asian or whatever. Like, that kind of gendering just...
Yeah. I don't mean to interrupt you, but they don't do it that way. It's right now, it's white, black, and transgender, the LGBTQ. See, right. And you hit it on the head, because I've always told people, what happens when we start splitting hairs like that? Because the Latinos want their place, seat at the table, the Asians want their seat at the table, and then the Asians are going to go, well, hold on, I'm Japanese. The Japanese have to have their seat at the table. The Chinese have, I'm Vietnamese. Well, I'm Slav. I'm the...
Well, William, you know, Latinos are considered minorities along with blacks, but actually Asians and South Asians, Indians, are not. We're considered model minorities, so we don't really get any preferential treatment. And I think part of the reason why is we're not big enough voting bloc. If we were a bigger voting bloc...
Oh, it's because you guys are smarter than us. You guys are smarter than us, Coach Lee. Your education, seriously, your education... The Tiger Mom wrote a book about this, and she got chastised. You're a racist. You're this or that. And she was just talking about the values, like Asians, and that's where Indians are from too. People forget, hey, to America, Indians are technically considered Asians. I said that in a bad way. I didn't mean it in a bad way. I just meant, you know, categorically, you're Asian. And The test scores show it, G. You guys put a greater value on education. Doesn't mean you're smarter. On paper, you are in terms of passing the test, et cetera. And I think deep down, that's what it is. You're not dumb and poor. You know, you're not somebody that can be manipulated, that, oh, we're here to help you. They can't say that to, I'm here to help you, bro. I earn six figures more than you. I don't need your help. You know.
Well, the highest income earning group in America are Indian Americans, and then right behind that, I think are Japanese and Chinese. But I will say, to be fair, the reason why is not because there's 1.2 billion geniuses over in India. It's not that. It's survivorship bias. So the ones who can make it all the way halfway across the world. You have to be pretty smart. You got to work pretty hard and get enough money to get over here, or at least get a scholarship to get over here, like my dad did. Whereas if you're Latino, it's not so hard to get here. You, apparently under Biden, you just walk over to the border and then you get a nice five-star hotel over in downtown Manhattan.
I swam.
Panama, you can still get here by land.
I'm being terrible because as soon as you said the 1.8 million, I thought of what Biden said. Well, yeah, he's right. Biden said you can find an Indian in every 7-Eleven.
Well, we are – so here that's to your point. We're stereotyped as either software engineers or 7-Eleven owners. So, I 7-Eleven owners aren't, you know – millionaires, not most of them. So,
but here's the thing, and I'm assuming because I know of a strong work ethic, I would not be shocked if a lot of Indians who did work at a 7-Eleven actually owned that franchise.
Yeah, or several of them. Yeah,
exactly. And you know what's a sad thing? I'm going to digress here for a moment before we get to David Hogue. Is they canceled the poor guy from The Simpsons, and then the character Ottolini. Then they canceled Aunt Jemima, and then correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was like the first millionaire, or I can't remember. But yeah, she was like living large, you know. So they kind of canceled people because progressives don't view them as an acceptable form of how we should see them. When I read up on Aunt Jemima, I no longer saw Aunt Jemima. I was like, holy mackerel. Whenever somebody showed, hey, did you know that lady there actually did this, this, and this? You know, so your thoughts real quick before,
cancel culture. I think that's funny because if you think about Land O'Lakes, right, there was a nice, beautiful Indian woman, a Native American woman. They took her off the land and kept the land.
That we took.
No joke. And then Aunt Jemima, they took her off and put a factory in her place. I mean, you just really can't make this up. The Democrats are repeating the same things they did 100 years ago. Let's get rid of the colored people and replace it with land, factories. But let's keep the white guy, Chef Boyardee. His face and his mug is still adorning every can that I see.
My favorite chef when I was poor and in college. That and I think it's a Chef Ramen, but let's talk David Hogue here real quick. He won the role of vice chair of the DNC. I believe he signified to me them jumping the shark. I'm trying to hold back on clips for copyright issues, but there's a great moment in David Hogg's inconsequential political career when I have it right here. What's her name? Lily Tang, I think is her name. Our producer can correct me if I'm wrong. I think her name is Lily Tang Williams. My favorite Asian out of New Hampshire. How's that? You know, when she went
Is that the one who's hitting all the circuits and she was working for Kamala's? Is that who you're talking about?
Lily Tang is the woman who at an event, she asked him, can you guarantee me that the government will never, ever become a tyranny or tyrannical? And he goes, pause. I cannot guarantee that. And she comes back with, the gun battle is over. And she explains, I'm from China. They killed 20 million of, you know. So it was at the Spike Cohen, David Hogue gun debate. In fact, a little plug here for our libertarian show, Free For All. Spike Cohen came on not long after that to speak to Big John about it. But, you know, it's to me, he's just an ignorant, uneducated fool. When I say uneducated, I'm talking about uneducated in life. And I do have one. Am I being too mean, too harsh? I hate the fact that he calls himself a Parkland survivor because he, according to reports, he was not at Parkland when it went down. He was at home, jumped on his little bike. Get over there. And then he started filming it. So it irks me that he's taking advantage as if he was there and giving that impression. And it's worked. You know, he wasn't smart enough to get into any Ivy League schools, and God bless him, because not many of us are. But once he became a name, Ivy League probably bumped somebody, probably an Asian, and gave him the slot that he did not earn. So he's never worked for anything in his life. He's a victim mentality who's used that. And I think him is jumping the shark. Your thoughts on David Hogue and his ideological beliefs in the future of the party from his perspective?
Yeah, you call him Hogue. I call him Hog. I mean, he tries to hog the spotlight, in my opinion. And he's a one-hit wonder, or I should say a one-issue wonder. And, you know, the late, great Rush Limbaugh always said that the Democratic Party is a coalition of one-issue people, right? You got the people who are pro-choice here, and you got the people who are pro-gun control here. You got the socialists here, and he's one of these guys. He's a pro-gun control, and I think he would take it to the extreme. I've watched him speak. If he ever had any real power, it would be very scary for our country, I believe. So I'm not surprised that as a mascot, basically, he's risen up to the leadership of the DNC. And I think they're just shooting themselves in the foot to have him as part of the leadership.
I agree, and he is supposedly the future of the party and where they want to go. So he was elected to the vice chair. I apologize to the audience. I should have said that. Ken Martin was elected to the chair, and he talked about his white privilege and equity and all that before he got elected. But the reason I didn't care about focusing on him, David Hogue is the future here, along with the other vice chair, Malcolm Kenyatta, who was also elected. And he's, if I'm correct, he's really into the diversity. Yeah, my research, identity, politics. He's an openly LGBTQ person of color, represents the Democrat Party's push towards what they call greater inclusivity, what I call destroying the country. When there's a handful of people who believe that, we got to treat them with respect, with dignity, but they want to lord over the majority of the country. Your thoughts on Kenyatta before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, he proudly wears his sexuality on his sleeve. And, more power to him. If that's what he wants to do, that's fine. But I don't see how that has any bearing on how anyone can do their job. Now, for Democrats, that is part of their job, right? Their identity is their job. And so it fits their mold, but like James Carville said, I believe you're going to talk about James Carville in a bit here, but James is basically saying you guys are just shooting yourselves in the foot and you're not learning anything from the history, most recent history. So, yeah, I mean, if that's what floats the Democrats' boats, fine. Well, you know, let them lose.
You know, the Democrats had success because of Obama. But Obama's endorsement, stuff he pushed for, none of it was really in favor in terms of America when they were polled. Most, if I'd say at least 90% of his endorsements failed to get over the finish line. I think Obama was unique because people voted for him for a variety of reasons, and I don't think it was because of his policy. And I think, remember, they lost the House after his first go-round. So I think it was a facade, if that's how you pronounce a word, in terms of they were fooling themselves of what they thought they had. And then obviously I am in the group that I questioned the 2020 election just based off the numbers and looking at it. In fact, they're still looking for those 20 million votes from 2020 that never materialized in 2024. But you know what? Who ever thought that Biden would be more popular amongst Black America than Obama? Who knew? You know? Anyway, I digress. But my point is this election in 2024 showed, hey, it is the economy, stupid. And that is what James Carville is known for. I look at it in my lifetime. I'm in my 50s now. The golden age in my lifetime for the Democrats was probably the Bill Clinton era. And James Carville orchestrated that. And he's renowned for his role in Bill Clinton's 92 campaign. And he's expressed significant dissatisfaction, as you brought up. And his frustration is partly to do with the DNC leadership election outcome, you know. And he reflects a broader discontent within the party. And it's highlighting tensions between traditional strategies and the progressive socialist shift towards identity politics and socialism over capitalism. His comments suggest a desire to return to a broader-based political strategy, i.e. politics that deal more with the economy, that deal more with people, you know, paying their bills, etc., more than what I call niche appeals. And look, I'm sorry. God bless every minority group out there in terms of transgender, et cetera. But there's a majority in America, and they're forcing the niche to become the majority through the government, and we've seen the results of that. It's a nightmare. And we're seeing the results of that through DOGE, through the grift. When it's tough to speak up to a power or you're labeled racist, what can happen? Now, in defense of the Democrat Party, I think everything DOGE is uncovering has been going on for well over a generation. So what are your thoughts? I know you told me earlier you saw a lot of quotes there from old James.
I love James Carville. As much as him and I disagree, he is one of the last few, like, I want to say pro-American Democrats, if there are that many left. So he's watching this whole leadership election of the DNC, and he just, I guess, threw up his hands on his podcast and said, there's got to be a planting these people and who are trying to campaign, right? Because I believe I watched one guy saying, I'm non-binary, and you don't have enough non-binary gender people here. I'm like, what is that? You look like a dude to me, but okay, you're non-binary, fine. So Carville calls it the level of jackery that the Democrat Party has embraced is just off the hilt. And he said, and to give you the whole quote, and it's like there's a plant somewhere in, quote, progressive, unquote, America that just to seize how many jackass stupid things they can embrace is stunningly stupid, both of them. So yep. James Carville never minces words, and I think he's right. He's absolutely right, and the Democrats might be in the wilderness for another 8 years. I mean, who knows?
I agree. Only because if Trump succeeds and the tariffs, you know, as much as it's not that I support him, as I view them as a tactic, you know, you got to be careful with that. If they last too long, you're going to be crossing a certain threshold. So he's got to get these tariffs out there to the biggest point to get these countries to the table, and they are. Because that's the strength, you know. Our producer said bully. Yeah, sometimes you got to bully to keep things fair because these countries have abused therein, and that's why I always say there is no free market. Go look at how our products do over there. Right. But that said, this division, you know, well, this is kind of what irks me. I'm like, let him keep going. You see our side. Well, you know, the Democrat Party needs to do that. I'm like, shut up. Let him keep going. We can use this. The only party that will fail to take advantage of this is the California Republican Party. Those people have no clue. But then again, they don't care because they're part of the grift. DOGE needs to come out here to the Republican Party in California. Anyway, I think they can use this the smart politicians that can use this to create unity, to find that broad appeal, and to grow our party while they're spewing nonsense. And I don't know if that's going to happen at the local level, I'm sorry, at the state level, but nationally, I do think it can happen. What are your thoughts before we move on from this?
I in California, no, that will never happen here. I think there are too many people with their hand out. So trying to cut waste here is going to be very difficult because there's too many people on the take. But nationally, it will happen a little bit, but is there going to be a massive shift? Unless something explosive, and I'm hearing that there might be something a little more controversial and explosive coming out in the news in the next week or two. I don't know if that's true, but unless there's something explosive that creates a major paradigm shift, we're just going to grow more slowly under Trump than we would under Democrats. Like Glenn Beck always says, with Democrats, actually with Republicans, we're heading towards a fiscal disaster on a choo-choo train, and with Democrats as a Concorde jet. So take your pick, right? We're headed in the same direction. Trump might slow it down. We might take a couple steps back. But that's like getting rid of a cable bill when you're spending $100,000 more than you take in. I mean,
yeah, you know, it boils down to, okay, got to pay the bills. That means this has got to go, this has got to go, can't afford this, can't afford that, et cetera. I think right now we have the open door to the silent majority, and we need to keep that door open. This narrative of a tribalism of hate that the Democrats spew, I mean, even minorities, it's not a topic, but a survey was done this week, and black men are swarming to Trump. They're at over 40% support of Trump. And you're talking about 18% in the teens. They're at over 40% now supporting Trump. So at the end of the day, these people, it doesn't help the Democrat Party when Maxine Waters goes, stop those. They're showing the country what we're doing. I'm like, are you that dumb lady? Yes, you are. You said that. Yes, you actually said that.
We said in last week's show, we talked about USAID, and they're losing their minds over the money we spend overseas for transgender operas and Sesame Street and Big Bird over in Iraq. Can you imagine when we start talking about local domestic departments? I mean, minds are just going to be blown all over the place, especially when we get to the Department of Education. Just be ready for that fight. We'll have like a 2-hour show on that alone, I bet.
You know, and what irks me is everybody should be for this. And I hear people say, well, you know, it's only 1% of America. It's not big of a deal. It isn't when you put it that way. To me, though, that's the lie. If that's only 1%, our government is beyond a behemoth. It's gargantuan to the point of uncontrollable if all this money makes up less than 1%. And two, the when you start throwing that stuff out individually, that's when it looks much – that's when you show the truth of how bad it really is, like you said, the Sesame Street. Because at the end of the day, there's always a group here that's hurting that's going to go, oh, that money could have come to us, you know. So I think they say it's less than 1% to deflect. They go, it's not a big deal, and they're trying – and it's failing, you know. But they're on point with the mantra, Elon is president, or billionaires are controlling the company or the country. But it's falling on deaf ears. You get the final word on this Democrat Party election, G.
Yeah, I don't think they've learned anything. And I think this whole, I mean, if you look at Google getting rid of DEI, Google, they're in liberal San Francisco, and they said, no, DEI, we're throwing that out.
Yeah,
Apple,
yeah.
I believe Apple has done that as well. Meta has done that. They're not learning that we don't want an advantage over white people. We just don't want to be discriminated against as minorities, and women want to be treated as women. So they're not learning their lesson. That's fine. I mean, the conservatives will take the House. I mean, I'm sorry, take the White House in 2028. We're happy to do that again under J.D. Vance, I'm guessing.
My take is go, David. Keep up the good work, little feller.
I think there's a picture of him from 5 years ago. He did the Nazi salute, not intentionally.
Yes. I see that. Hi, I'm the Hey David Hogue. All right, let's move on here. Has Fox News become the news network for all Americans, not just Republicans, but Democrats too. In an unexpected twist, recent Nielsen Fusion data reveals Fox News has eclipsed MSNBC and CNN in capturing both Democratic and independent viewers, showcasing a surprising shift in audience demographics. This data suggests that despite Fox News being traditionally associated with conservative viewers, it has a substantial following among Democrats, challenging the notion that the network's audience is strictly conservative. Don't believe us? Well, look at some of these numbers. Fox News in January had 427,000 Democrat viewers for primetime programming. CNN managed to reach 174,000, and MSNBC had 255,000. And this shows that Fox News had nearly as many Democrat viewers as CNN and MSNBC combined for primetime slots. Now, gee, I think this is temporary. I would love that it be permanent. I'm not a regular Fox News watcher anymore. But what are your thoughts when you see that?
Primetime. You're talking like Jesse Waters,
yes.
Sean Hannity.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, part of me is skeptical. Like, okay, I know the numbers are there, but I think it's like opposition research or something to that effect. Sure. But my favorite is Jesse Waters because he is a little more centrist in the way he presents his stuff, where Sean Hannity is unabashedly conservative and Laura Graham as well. So I watch Jesse Waters because he does talk about like the things that do matter, and it is, okay, Trump segment one, then there's something about a Democrat, but it's always anti-Democrats, right? And segment two, I love his man on the street where he was walking around in Harlem, not him, but one of his guys, asking them what they think about Big Bird in Iraq for $20 million. And you got these.
What they say.
They're like, what? I want that money. I mean, I think the same thing. Like, spend that money on us, right? You took it from us, so spend it on us. But I do watch Jesse Waters, and I think a lot of Democrats, maybe Jesse's making some really good points. I do wonder if they really are watching Sean Hannity, but again, maybe it's opposition research. But it blows me away that Fox News is attracting more Democrats than CNN and MSNBC combined.
Well, it's also independents, G. Fox News averaged 709,000 viewers in primetime during that same time frame. And CNN had 117,000 independent viewers. MSNBC reached 155,000. So, heck, they doubled it, the independent viewers. Fox News significantly leads in viewership among independents compared to other two networks. And your thoughts on the independents. Before you give me your thoughts, though, our producer says it's the Howard Stern effect. And that's people who hated him tuned in for longer than his fans did. You know, I've heard that theory before. I didn't know it was a Howard Stern effect. I disagree only because that would have happened a long time ago. Fox News is in year 20. It's probably close to 30 years now.
That's 96. So, yeah, almost 30.
Yeah, so this is the first time it's happened. I'm not disagreeing with the Howard Stern effect. I do believe that because there are Democrat cronies who listen to Rush and other shows just to get the little snippets they can distort. So I'm sure there are Democrats who do that, but I think this is beyond that. Your thoughts on the Howard Stern effect and independent viewers, Gene?
I believe that is a small effect, but you know that would have been true for the last 28 years. I do believe that with what Doge is uncovering at USAID. If you go to MSNBC, and I see clips on YouTube from MSNBC, they're still talking about Trump is a felon, Trump is a fascist, how fascist is this move that he made? You only get the USAID stuff on Fox News to uncover what's really being spent. And so I think there's that effect as well, as like people are realizing how much the corruption there is in the federal government. I mean, we all knew that $6,000 toilet seats was a thing, but when you're talking about $1,200 meals to feed the poor under Chelsea Clinton's thing, yeah. I mean, people are going, "What? This fraud is deeper than we think." And where can you get that news? Fox.
Right. And the thing with Howard Stern, he was a phenomena. Fox isn't a phenomena at this time. It's what they're covering. I think part of the reason, I'm speculating, I don't know, but I think maybe one thing to consider is, as you said, they're tired of hearing Fox is, or Fox, Trump is a felon. Trump is a felon. You know, it's like, we get it. We get it, Rachel. What? Rachel earns $25 million? Yeah, that's more interesting than that now. But the final topic on this is advertisers are returning. People forget about during the height of the cancellation, they were going to Fox advertisers. And at one point, Tucker had like only big, didn't even have Big Pharma, because Big Pharma hated Tucker. You know, that whole the big thing, Big Pharma was a big driving force in wanting to get Tucker off the air, because Tucker was bringing RFK and people like that on. And I'm not saying that's the whole reason, but Tucker did not have any advertisers at one point on his show. You know, so Fox, no matter the ratings, Fox wasn't earning a dime on him. They're coming back, that, the old ones, and the new ones. Your thoughts on that before we close this chapter?
Yeah, I mean, for a while, I think it was just Mike the Pillow Guy and Gold, Gold.
It was the guy from that show, that Dallas spinoff show. Producer, help us. Who's the guy that he's always doing the silver?
Yeah, silver, gold, and you know, to protect against inflation, and Mike the Pillow Guy, because he was canceled a long time ago. And so it's good to see that advertisers are feeling like they can come back to it. But that's the Trump effect, right? We talked about the Howard Stern effect. The Trump effect is everybody now wants to be in his good graces. So you see Pinchar from Google and Zuckerberg from Meta going over there. And in essence, I mean, I think Zuckerberg's a little more libertarian, but I think it's the same effect going on, right? Advertisers feel like, okay, well, now we can go with the Republican brand, which is now a little more Big John's going to lose his mind, but which is a little more libertarian than it has been in the past. Cause we know Trump's not a principled conservative. He's more of a moderate type person. So
I think Trump's like me. It's like, what's the best scenario for this situation to get the most out of it? You know, and it tends to be more conservative type values. Well, for the audience here, before we move on, you know, here's a word of warning. Facebook, Google, or rather Meta, all those companies, they're not all of a sudden conservative.
Right.
A little pushback. All the corporations in Germany became Nazi corporations because they wanted to live to see the following day. You know, that's what corporations do. They go where the political winds blow. And real quick, the gold guy, yes, our producer, William Devane, you know, he's been on there for like 20 years. It's like, that's his longest running gig he's probably had, you know. Yeah. Actually, that's not true, Big John. Most corporations don't donate 50-50 to both parties anymore. It hasn't been the case for a long, long while. But I guess it depends on what you define as corporations. But they do hedge their bets. But lately, it's been pure Democrats, a lot of the money. But I think, too, a lot of these rich people in corporations, it's no longer money being donated to corporations, Big John, our producer, and the G. I think they're just rich enough they go and give their money to a PAC. And the PAC may one cycle support the Democrat, may one cycle support the Republican. But I could be wrong on that, but I'm always looking at the numbers, and that hasn't been the case. But I apologize, Big John, if I am wrong. Don't mean to throw you under the bus.
You're correct. They're not principled conservatives. I don't think Zuckerberg is going to CPAC anytime soon. I think they just, in the end, you're choosing between two options, right? And so during some election cycle, they're going to choose one option or the other. But ever since 2004, the options have mostly been going Democrat, right, with Obama and Biden. But this has been the first shift since 2004 where the Republican brand actually has some that nationally, I should say, has an attraction about it. In 2004 is because we're trying to win the war, right? And it was 9/11 and patriotism. And this time around, it's more about you know, corruption in the government. And I think that whole thing with COVID and you're losing your job if you don't get vaccinated, I think a lot of people got really upset about that as well. So I think that played out this past year.
I mean, I have to admit, and I'm not saying this because I do support Trump, but I've never seen a force like Trump in politics ever in my life, because Obama was manufactured. Again, his endorsements never went anywhere. Trump actually was winning 90% of his endorsements. They always highlighted the ones he lost, but never the ones he won. But it's like, I was watching another podcast. They were like, man, Trump's like on Gladiator. I'm like, yeah, Donaldo Trumpless. You know, he just no one wants to fight him right now. All right, let's move on here.
Well, he did say he would beat George Washington and Lincoln if he ran head to head against them. So. I think he's saying it as a joke, of course.
Yeah, you know, I'd have to see where that came from. Our producer saying 55% of corporate political donations went to Republicans, while 45% went to Perplexity. Yeah, you need to double check where Perplexity is grabbing that from. But it could be true, Big John, our producer. It could be. Like I said, that's why I hedge myself. It's like, and there's so many ways to give money, too. It's no longer the simple constituent and the corporations with the formulation of PACs. And anybody can start a PAC. That's a scary thing, too. All right, let's talk about this quickly. Tulsi and RFK Jr. confirmed as the next DNI and HHS secretaries. Tulsi Gabbard is the new Director of National Intelligence, and Robert F. Kennedy is the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Both have outlined ambitious plans for their roles. So we're going to talk about their first task that they've stated they'll undertake. And then we'll go slightly deeper. But first of all, a Cash Patel update. Now, we know he doesn't work at 7-Eleven, don't we, G?
No, he doesn't.
He'll probably take out some of the hoodlums hanging around 7-Eleven, you know. But his confirmation status. And Cash Patel, before you idiots go, he's making fun of him. He's my hero. I mean, the guy just strikes me as you shoot him and that bullet's gonna bounce off. He's like, he is the leader of that what do they call those characters? Those marionette movie, Team America. He's the first one out there. You know? But Cash Patel passed the Senate Judiciary Committee vote with a tally of 12-10 on February 13, 2025. This vote advanced his nomination to lead the FBI to the full Senate for consideration. Oh, real quick, hey, Big John, if you find us where that source is, I want to share it because I did not know that, and that is good information to give to the audience there. So anyways, G, your quick thoughts before we move the Tulsi and RFK on Cash Patel. Do you think – I think he has the votes. I think at this point it's a done deal for all three – well, two of them are passed with him too.
Yeah, I think since J. Edgar Hoover, we've had a lot of corruption in the FBI. He's going to be the only person in 60 years that'll get in there and clean it up, and I think everyone knows that. So I think he will get confirmed, and he has that crazy look in his eyes. You ever watched him in an interview, and he's like, and you're like, okay, this guy's going to get some stuff done. It might be a little chaotic in the FBI building for, you know, a few months, but he'll get things done.
Look, the FBI has been corrupt from its existence. And I'm sorry, but Hoover was the epitome of corruption. And there's been more than one book and more than one source that has come out and said he had literally dossier files on every POTUS and kind of got his own way. And you know what? God bless him, because I'm sure he's a hero for the cross-dressers. All right. So I'm not sure exactly when the date of the vote is, but I do expect him. I expect McConnell to vote no, like he has so far.
Of course. Does he know what he's doing anymore at all?
Hey, who am I? Yes, I'm making fun of him. You know why? That man has destroyed lives. Oh, so I give Big John kudos here. Open Secrets provided the contribution data, so that's legit. 55% of Republicans. You know, I wonder what the PAC money differential is. That's probably what I'm thinking of. You just get bombarded with so many numbers, but I did not know that. 55% of corporations support Republicans still, 45% support Democrats. You know, kudos to our producer there with that. All right, let's get down to Tulsi Gabbard. Most of y'all don't even realize this. Y'all need to get on the horn and understand what these people are being confirmed for. Why do I say that? Because I had to look it up. What the hell do you guys have for again? Director of National Intelligence.
We're supposed to be the experts.
I knew what the job did. I knew it coordinates activities, policies, and operations of, here's what most people don't know, 18 U.S. intel agencies. We have 18 intelligence agencies. Her first, her stated day one tasking is the eradication of politically targeted intelligence gathering. Gabbard's primary goal is to refocus the Intelligence Committee on its core mission, ensuring that intelligence operations are devoid of political bias. And people, that political bias does not extend just to politicians, but to conservatives, because we were being targeted. The Department of Justice, I don't think it's technically an intel agency, but I'm sure they have their own forms of it. They labeled people, conservatives going to these school boards, as domestic terrorists, you know? So your thoughts on her first tasking. Do you think that's a good goal, or do you think she should be doing something differently?
No, I think that's a good goal. I've been watching this series on Netflix that I encourage everyone to watch called Turning Point, The Cold War. And it talks a little bit about how the CIA started. And it's like you said about the FBI, it's been corrupt from the beginning. I mean, these CIA agents would be dropped in behind Soviet lines, and they're basically left there to die. I mean, they eventually all got rounded up and sent off to Siberia or killed. So if we focused more on protecting our country but not treating people as casualties like Stalin did, I think Tulsi would do a great job cleaning things up there and, you know, focusing on the core mission. And, yeah, I'm not sure if the CIA has been focused inwards more than outwards. And if they have been, that's really disturbing. And I believe she will get things cleaned up. Should I be surprised that Democrats all voted against her and Republicans mostly voted for her when she was a Democrat just a year ago? I mean, it's just a year ago you could not predict.
She crossed the line. You do not cross the Clintons. And real quick, I had heard of that series from our producer, Big John. He thinks that he says it's a great series as well. So we get the Indian and the Greek on the same page.
Yeah. It's actually very fair. Turning Point, that one is very fair. I mean, it gives the pros and cons about dropping the bomb on Japan and all that. So it presents everything fairly. And I'm on the third episode. So far it's been really fair.
I have to check it out. I mean, I got to be honest. If it's a night show, the wife has laid down the law and says, Scamanda. It's a series on ABC or something about somebody faking cancer. Her name's Amanda. I thought that's just whoever their marketing person is. That's just like whoever did that, Scamanda. But anyway, let's move on here to speaking of another Democrat who every Democrat voted against, and it was just a Democrat just less than a year ago, I want to say. Health and Human Services Secretary Roberto, I don't know what his middle name is, RFK.
Robert Fitzgerald?
F. Is it Fitzgerald?
I don't know.
Yes, Fitzgerald. There you go. Okay. So he's the Secretary of Health and Human Services. He's going to oversee health policy, public health, medical research, and welfare programs, managing agencies like NIH. That's a big debate there. CDC, another one. FDA and CMS will promote health and provide human services across the U.S. His day one tasking is ending big pharma influence. Fox, MSNBC, all the cables quivering because that's where they get all their advertising money from. RFK Jr. is focusing on challenging the undue influence of pharmaceutical companies on health policy. His goal includes advocating for drug safety, transparency, and drug trials, which I think is uber important, and reducing the lobbying power of big pharma within health regulatory bodies. I'm for all that, but I also am glad there will be pushback because we can't blindly do things either way. Your thoughts, G?
I believe in science, and I always have been, and it's not a political thing like people on the left and right have made it. So I think these companies need to make money because, what is it, 3 out of 4 of their drugs they spend billions of dollars on and never gets approved, and they have to make up that money with the 4th drug that does get approved. So, and a lot of these things are life-saving. But you're right in terms of, and RFK is right in terms of okay, insulin, that's been around forever, and why for so long have injections been costing hundreds of dollars? Thanks to Trump, it was 35, and then the Democrats undid it, and then Biden put it back to 35 and took credit for it. But it's like things like that. It's like, I agree with, okay, big pharma should not be making $1,000 on a thing of insulin when this has been out for a long time. So I think RFK, I did watch an interview with RFK, and they were asking about vaccines. And, you know, of course, we know that he spent so many years saying vaccines, vaccines, vaccines are harmful over and over again. But, you know, when you're trying to gain attention, you got to say outlandish things. Now that he's in power, I think he's going to moderate a lot of these things and say, look, you know, vaccines for measles, I think that's a good thing. Do we need to give all 70 of them in the first year of life? No, let's look at that. So, but getting rid of Big Pharma's unscientific influence over our healthcare is a good thing.
Right, right. Our producer chimed in saying 97% of all drugs fail. I do vaguely remember reading something like that. I did a paper on Big Pharma when I was in college back in the late 90s, or no, the mid-90s, early to mid-90s, and it truly is a racket. I was shocked. In some cases where they can get a patent for 17 years off a drug, the government's paid for 80% of all the research for that drug. It's truly a bad racket. And as far as the Fruit Loops banning, no, Fruit Loops is a ban. Do you know why? Because he got him to change the red dye and to pull it out. That was cancerous. That was banned not only in Canada, but all in Europe too. So hear, hear for my sugary Fruit Loops. All right, all right. So actually, I'm overweight. I just had a conversation with the wife tonight. Stop buying chips. I have no willpower. Damn it. We said we were going to lose weight. So I am on board for the Make America Healthy Again. Now, I will push back, G. The man has always had great influence, and I don't think he should be telling people. And he got busted, you know, like one woman, no, I wouldn't vaccinate my kid. You know, there's certain vaccines that do work. But, you know, when you start doing 70 at once, and a lot of those vaccines have gone through the proper trials, but not all of them. I mean, they want to put COVID to get the kids jabbed with it, and that still is going through. They're still figuring it out. So that's my issue with people who just want to make blanket statements or look at it from a straight perspective. It's you got to pull that apart, you know, in terms of the vaccines, et cetera, et cetera. All right, let us move on here. Where am I at? Oops, let me grab my notes here. Okay. Oh, here we go. I had to look at my two notes. My friends, I'm trying a new system this week in terms of how I'm doing the show. Demanding money back from the grift. How media companies grifted from the government. And what am I talking about here, G? I am talking about, let me get my notes down here. I am talking about the media. So, the intersection of government funding and media operations raises questions about journalistic integrity and influence. Spoiler alert, this isn't recent. This goes all the way back, and I do have some historical reference to talk about. However, G, your thoughts on Politico receiving $8.2 million. You and I have been actually involved in politics. Is there anything that warrants a $10,000 a month subscription to Politico's, Politico Pro.
Yeah, that's right.
Correct.
No, and I don't know of anybody who would pay that out of their own pocket, but if it was reimbursed as a legitimate business expense, i.e. by the government, I think people would be more willing to pay for it. I mean, if you pay for my Wall Street Journal subscription, sure, I'll let you do that. I like reading it.
Oh, no, you're right. It's like, for example, when I had my small business out of my garage, the business was paying for our satellite hookup because it was ESPN, sports, all that stuff. When the business moved out, I let it run out because I'm like, I'm not that interested in it. So it becomes an abuse, and they got $8.2 million. And we're going to talk about how that's a quid pro quo legally done. It's purposely done that way to where it is legal. No, we're not, Grifty. Yet, wink, wink, you are. You know, the Federalist, there was a Federalist article that just came out recently that said the high subscription fees are indicative of patronage than legitimate new subscriptions. And they're correct. Like I said, I've been around the game long enough to know there's no reason for anybody. You want to know what's happening? You either have insiders that you personally know, or you read the Wall Street Journal, which is a de facto magazine, or the Washington Post or New York Times, and you pay them, and you're going to get you're going to get similar type of news as what Politico gets. And I'm not exaggerating, I'm not downplaying that, but that's just a simple truth. So I think they should demand back the $8.2 million. Then there's Reuters. Now, Reuters did not get direct funding from USAID, but it did come out. I don't know if it was through Doge, but I assume that they were playing the shell game here. They got $9 million. About $9 million was paid to TRSS, Thomson Reuters Special Services, by DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency. The benefit? Cybersecurity. And all they did was analytics. Don't you think, G, they probably were better off going to an actual cybersecurity company than a news media organization? And I I say that based on the fact of how many hacks the government has had. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, this is another grift, right? I mean, if Reuters making easy money from the government, and I'm sure this was all put in place by Democrats. I'm not thinking any Republicans, although I'm not going to say that absolutely for sure. But no, any government, any agency is going to take money.
Why do you say that? Because it's a leftist slant, everything they put out?
Right. And I've never paid for Reuters, but I still read their stuff. I don't know what they need to get paid for. I just don't even understand that.
I should dump my Trend Micro. Reuters. Who are you going to call? Reuters. So, yes, they should demand the $9 million back as well. Yep. Then there's Associated Press. Again, no direct funding from USAID, but the AP's payments from the U.S. government are supposedly for its news services, and that's $37.5 million. I got to be honest. I used to subscribe to the AP for their AP style book, and I saw all their other subscriptions. $37.5 million? No. I think that may fall under, $3 million federal accounts automatically being registered to subscribe, though. Wink, wink. Give them. And why do G and I say this, that it's mostly leftist? Look at the leftist slant, thoughts on the AP. 37.5. I mean, that's, now for people who don't understand, the AP is a conglomeration of reporters who pull everything together to get all the news out. So I'm sure there's various legal kickbacks in how they're able to generate revenue, but $37.5 million, I would imagine, it creates a big, big budget of pro-Democrat news. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, of course, the 37.5 is since 2008, so around $2 million a year. And if you've got, a million employees paying $2 a year, okay, I get that. But again, I get my news, and sometimes I get it from AP, and I get it for free. I just go to AP.com and read it right there. So I don't know what they're paying for, and it's coming from the government.
Correct. And I apologize. I should have said 2008. Then we're funding the UK here. The British Media Action. The BBC Media Action maintains a non-ownership relationship with the BBC. I'm sorry. When I see the BBC, I think back to my sailor days. From brand associations, shared expertise, and occasional collaborative projects while operating independently as a charity. However, the BBC Media Action leverages the BBC's expertise through knowledge exchange, personnel secondments, technical support, and research insights for its projects. So I just read off a lot of nonsense. Here's what the most important part out of that is. Leverages the BBC's expertise through personal secondments. What that means, in the military, we call it forming out, meaning somebody from my division would go work for this division. So they say, we're not related to the BBC. Well, then why do you have all these BBC people working for BBC Media Action? Oh, no, that's just a personal secondment. No, it's you're working with them, and they're supposedly using this money to spread proper journalism. The BBC, boy, our media can learn how to be corrupt from the BBC. That's how bad they are. I mean, if I'm correct, they hid a couple of pedos they knew about over there for generations, preying on kids, you know, that worked at the BBC. So they received approximately $3.2 million. It's only $3.2 million, really? Tell that to the people in Western North Carolina. That's always my fallback now. Tell that to the people in Western North Carolina. You know? That's one, not only on BBC, but the fact that it's not even American in terms of why not give it to an American company to go spread journalism and love to the rest of the world?
Well, William, so I have my Google Nest Hub here, and I changed the voice from American to British because the British just sound smarter with their accent, right? And I'm not even going to try to do an English accent, but maybe that's why they're paying them, is like those guys are just naturally smart because they got that British accent, so they can teach our American journalists a thing or two. I don't know what this is all about, but if I did the AP thing at $2 million a year, and of course that's average, BBC is getting paid 3.2 just last year. So that's more.
Yeah. Yeah. And before we move on here, the AP's 1.6 million, same story. But here's how the grift works. And I've experienced this, not directly in this way, but I lost an account in gambling because we wouldn't endorse their product and write articles on their product. But media outlets can justify government payments and subscriptions to people or organizations like Political for the Political Pro. For influence. So you have subscription for editorial influence. And the payment implies access to information with an expectation of positive or balanced coverage, meaning we're going to subscribe this many people. You're going to get 5, 6, 7, 8 million. And we expect this type of influence. It doesn't even have to be stated because it's been in place for so long. It's just continuing. It's like over 98% of U.S. aid employees all voted leftist Democrat. So it's in there, and they don't replace themselves with conservatives. So the grift keeps going here. And like you said, G, there's probably a few rhinos in there that have taken advantage of the grift that they let into their club. So this isn't illegal, but creates influence over editorial decisions, perception versus reality. We're being fed a faux narrative, a false narrative in terms of how they want us to see the world, how they want us to see conservatives. I mean, technically speaking, you shouldn't be anywhere near conservative outlets because they're all racist. That's the perception they want to give. Trump was racist the moment he came down that escalator because he had an R by his name. And real quick on the Trump thing, they always bring up the Central Five or the Central. What they said to tell you. Yeah, what they failed to tell you is the DA, the city, everybody thought those guys were guilty, every single New Yorker, but they singled it out to make it sound like it was only Trump. So it's like you have to look at things in context. So what do you think of that grift in terms of how it works? You know, it's a legal grift because they subscribe to all these things, but I believe it's purposely done to it's a system in place. We're going to feed you money because I wonder how big these organizations would be without that influx of money.
Yeah. So Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett's partner, right, in his speech on 24 misjudgments, human misjudgments, one of them was called the incentive bias. And he said, basically, show me how a man gets paid and I'll show you what he's going to do. Right. So what his bias is. So they can say for this journalism, we're just trying to expand the world of journalism by giving them money. But the ones who's giving the money, these media outfits are going to have to cater to what that person wants from that journalism. Otherwise, that money will stop. So that incentive bias is obviously going to lean leftward because this is all Democrat stuff.
Exactly. And I experienced that in with media bias. My company was in the top 2,000 in rankings. I mean, as a little peon, I was stunned when I got that first offer. We'll give you $100,000 for 3 months. What do I need to do? You know, it's like you don't realize you're buying into. What do I need to do? So the grift lies in the grift lies in the lack of transparency about these financial ties, meaning they don't let us know. And that is why I say it purposely misleads we, the public, regarding the so-called independence of these news outlets. You know, now some of these news outlets say, no, we self-police. We self-police ourselves. You know, gee, your quick thoughts on the self-policing.
No, you're not going to self-police. You're going to keep the gravy train going, and that, you know, no one's going to stop that next check for the sake of some higher ideal. I mean, most people will just go, okay, we're fairly objective in their own world thinking. Let's get that next check and move on.
Exactly. So some historical context, not dealing necessarily with a grift like this, but just the ties of elitism companies to the government. The first one is one that I always talk about, the Hearst newspapers in the Spanish-American War in the late 19th century. For those who aren't aware, that was a Cuba situation. That's when the term yellow journalism came out. William Randolph Hearst, he wanted war. And here's what people don't understand. Theodore Roosevelt wanted war too, and he was very close to Hearst. You know, in fact, he had already given some orders as secretary. I forget what he was secretary of, that he did not have permission to. He was expecting war. It makes you wonder that tie-in with their friendship. He was the assistant secretary of the Navy. Duh. Yeah, he's the one who built the Great White Fleet. That's the color of the ships, people, not us Navy men. He ordered the U.S. Asiatic Squadron to be ready for action, which was done without explicit authorization from above. And his buddy Hearst, William Hearst, was pushing for war. They sensationalized stories about the Spanish oppression in Cuba, and they exaggerated and even fabricated accounts of Spanish atrocities. And that's where the term "remember the Maine," because it was an explosion. Turns out the explosion was I can't remember, but I do remember reading up on that explosion. It wasn't what the papers were saying, but that's what they used to rally opinion for war. So that's just one example. There's Operation Mockingbird. That's a code war, the CIA's operation that aimed to influence domestic and foreign media by recruiting journalists and executives to disseminate anti-communist propaganda. New York Times and CBS were part of that. The 1975 Church Committee revealed that. There's the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which was pivotal in escalating U.S. involvement in Vietnam. There was really no deep reporting. That was probably the beginning of journalists. Oh, I got a contact there. And they just believed without questioning what the contact told them. You know, in return, hey, I got a contact there. And they use that to leverage their own career. So this has been going on for generations. Gee, a couple of your final thoughts on that grift before we close it out.
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, like you said, the relationship between Roosevelt and Hearst basically led us into war, right? And it's because, I mean, they've always said the media is like the fourth branch of government, right? But nowadays, it does seem like that fourth branch of government is permanently Democrat. And and I don't want it to be Republican either. I just want it to be fair and equal, right? So if you talk about like during the 2003-2004 time frame where George Bush was talking about WMDs, do I think he was lying about it? No, I think he really believed WMDs were there. But we found out they weren't. But that whole media thing, and this was a Fox News thing. It wasn't a CNN necessarily or MSNBC, maybe CNN, but they weren't pushing it as much. It wasn't like this, you know, holistic, all the media pushing one narrative, but it was enough for America to say, okay, yeah, we got to invade Iraq. So, you know, if the fourth branch of government can be fair and objective, it's to our benefit. But when they're compromised with money and handouts from the government, I fear for our democracy.
Exactly. I wholeheartedly agree. All right, people, let's close this out. But first of all, there are more examples. There's the Red Scare and McCarthyism in the 1950s with Senator Joseph McCarthy led a campaign against alleged communists within the U.S. and media outlets like the Washington Times Herald and the Chicago Tribune either supported McCarthy or did not critically challenge his claims. And no, G and I don't support communism. It's the lack of reporting. The papers helped amplify the anti-communist witch hunts and contributed to the blacklisting of individuals, including those who were innocent. And as G said, there's the buildup of the weapons of mass destruction. So when people scoff at these grifts, remember, history proves them wrong. And the adage that most Americans believe, that doesn't happen in the United States, is merely an elitist trope given by those, whether you're rich or poor, who simply don't want to believe ugly truths. And with that, my friends, we're going to end this show. We're going to shoot our hot takes off camera here, so look for that clip this week along with this episode. G, I'm glad you got over your mic issues there. G was like...
It was a slight panic over here as I was trying to reboot.
Exactly.
That's what happens when you get a new laptop.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I did not have I must have accidentally shut my producers. Yes. Jimmy Savile. When I was talking about the BBC protecting pedophiles, that's who I was thinking of. Thank you, Mr. Producer. He was a BBC pedo, not for a few years, but I want to say like over 20 years, you know. And then Big John, our producer, says McCarthy was actually right about his accusations up until he became an alcoholic. The problem I had with the McCarthyism wasn't that he wasn't right. He was right, but they just lost it. And like if you disagree with somebody, well, you're a communist. You're supporting him. And then Hoover, you know, in between changing dresses, would have somebody, you know, investigate you, you know. So yes.
So that Netflix show Turning Point has a good segment on McCarthy and the Red Scare and all that. So again, another reason to watch it. I think it was episode 3 that was in.
Roy Khan, he says. I don't know who Roy Khan is. You got to be a little bit more sharper. I mean, quicker for us. We're slow here. Well, I am. G comes from some good stock.
I don't know who that is either.
McCarthy's aid. All right. Our producer's going to keep sending me stuff. Let me close this out. We're at 1:12 now. Do not forget, my friends, to like and share this podcast. okay. All right. The last plug here for our producer. Roy Khan later became a GOP operative into the Nixon term. Okay. So everybody, thank you for tuning in.
Oh, he was the guy who helped train Trump. Daddy Trump got Donald Trump to – yes, I think I know who he's talking about.
The producer, G, this show's never going to end now. All right. Yeah, do not forget to like and share this show, Fired Up, for your source for conservative fun talk. We had a good time tonight. You can find this podcast as well as others, including my culture podcast, The Red, White, and Rude, and my sports podcast, Points on the Board, at grumblingsmedia.com. As well as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, ePandora, under the handle Grumblings Media. Thank you for tuning in. Do not forget to subscribe to us as well. It's free. Just check it out on YouTube or Rumble. And until next week, I am William Del Pilar for Big John, G. Mangani, and Fired Up. Until next week, I bid you adieu.